Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leanne, and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions, the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to this step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're discussing step 12. And I'll read the first paragraph on page 96, and then we'll have our panel share for a few minutes each on each of the readings. And tonight, we have Ashley and Kay here to make the table. And if you were here last week, we weren't working on step 12, and now we're going to finish up with step 12 tonight. So on page 96, and step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So on page 96, suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist it upon him if he prefers to consult someone else.
I'm Ashley, I'm an alcoholic.
And Ashley.
And I know this isn't sort of the official, I don't know if this is how you officially do it, but I have a sponsor who's actually sitting next to me. I love her. And my sobriety date is June 30th, 2003. And my home group is Tuesday Big Book in Ghent. And we meet at 5:30 on Tuesdays. So please come visit us. As far as, you know, when the first start reading the paragraph, when it says, suppose you're making your second visit to a man, I immediately sort of shut down and think, I haven't made true 12-step calls, and that's the case. I'm on the 12-step list. People can, you know, I make 12-step calls. Like, people have wanted me to call someone on phone watch and things like that and talk with folks, but I don't relate to that traditional go see your man and give him the book and let him read it and go back the second time. But what I relate to in that paragraph is, if you can reach those for me, is about talking about the program and talk about my experience and my practical advice. And also where it says, if he wishes to make a decision and tell a story, like let him do it if he wishes, but don't insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. And I think with that, I've had lots of experiences of talking to people that have come into AA or friends of mine that have wanted me to talk to their spouses or sisters or whatever. And I've learned, and through all good advice from folks I've consulted with, I just try to keep it really casual. I just say, this is my experience. This is what happened to me. You know, where it talks about, like, we try not to be any kind of crusade or anything like that. I haven't had good experience trying to shove anything down anybody's throat. And the more I can use the words, this is how it was with me, this is how I felt, you know, this is what happened to me, that kind of thing, that's how I feel like I've reached people. And I don't get too wrapped up in the end result. I think just saying it out loud and saying my experience has been helpful for me. I don't know if it's going to help the other person. And sadly, most times it doesn't. I mean, maybe it plants a seed, I guess. But I don't know that we get anybody sober. I think we can lay it on front of them, like we talk about, lay out the spiritual toolkit at their feet. But I think people get sober when they want to get sober. You know, when they're willing to do what it takes when they've hit bottom. So yeah, it's like, let them know that you're available. I let them know that I'm available. I used to be really scared about telling people that I was in recovery, that I was an alcoholic. I worried who would they tell, and how would those people judge me, and how would that affect my life and my business and my friendships, and who would look at me sideways because of that. And I don't really worry about that much anymore. I'm not saying I never worry about it, but I don't worry about it much anymore. And I don't know. I just kind of, a lot of people know that I'm in recovery, and I don't think it really matters. I don't think that they think I'm any less or really probably more of a person, but they know that I'm available for them. So, anyway.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kay, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Simple Actions Group for asking me here. I've had an awesome day, and I attribute it to this. Knowing I was going to be up here tonight, I had to be extra spiritual today. and actually, it worked. You know, I started my day out right, and it's been a great day. So I thank you all. The newcomers. The second visit to a man, and he has read this volume. I don't think I've ever done that. Just given them the volume and then come back and talk to them. So I don't really have any experience with that. I have given an employer the big book to read and have gone back to talk to them. I have given the big book to a sponsee's employer and then gone back and met with them. And it's not much different than what you would do with an alcoholic. I go back and I talk to him and I share my experience, strength, and hope. I've been around long enough and I've done enough crazy stuff that I've approached the newcomer in all kinds of ways. Unfortunately, I'm a frustrated school teacher, I think. I like to lecture. I'm very animated. I'm sitting on my hands right now, so I won't be flying all over the place. And I got a little bit of the actor in me. I like to dramatize. So I'm pretty good at talking to people because they like that generally. I do a lot of the talking, and I try very hard to remember what it was like for me when I came in here and how different people talked to me about stuff. And to remember who really reached me and who didn't. Even not knowing anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, I could tell the genuine, helpful people from the not so helpful. and I could tell the difference. I listened different. I paid more attention differently. The big book talks about a message that has weight and depth. And I think we're all have a built-in detector of what that looks like in regards to our alcoholism. And so I try to remember that when I'm talking to newcomers. and not to fool around and be too phony. I can't help but be a little phony. It's part of who I am, too. But to try to remember, you know, this is a life and death matter, and it saved my life, and I want to be able to pass that on. The other thing I try to remember very much, we prayed before we came in here in the secret room. I like that room. But my prayer before I do anything like this, speak, is I always ask God to speak through me and to use me and to help me tell the truth. Because I want to entertain you guys, and I want to entertain the newcomer, and I want the newcomer to like me, and I want y'all to like me. And if I don't watch it, that takes over, and it goes, it's no longer about carrying the message, it's about promoting Kay. And so I always have to be cognizant of that and to ask God to help me. I like the line that says, having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. And to let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it. So what I like to do when I talk to a newcomer is leave a good taste in their mouth. I want to present AA as a wonderful thing, not something that's going to make them do anything. I know how much that frightened me, the thought that you all were going to make me do stuff. and I was right, you did. But I try to leave a friendly feeling that this is up to them, that we're here, I'm here if they need me, and if they don't, you know, maybe we can be friends. And that seems to work pretty good. It worked good for me. I didn't want anybody telling me I had to do stuff. That's a really big deal for this alcoholic, and I kind of think it is for any. So I let them know right away, you know, this is for people who want it. It's a great thing. Hang out for a while. See what you think. You can come and go as you please. This place is free. I let them know it's free in every way. You know, we're not going to try to proselytize or convert you or do anything. It's a great place for crazy people like me. And that seems to work. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on the service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn the truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God.
This paragraph I really relate to a lot. Fortunately, I've, for the most part, pretty soon after I got in recovery, have been in a position to be able to help people. With flexibility with my time, with rides, I didn't lose my license, so I could drive people. I sometimes was in a position to be able to loan money and that type of stuff. I could have had people stay with me, I could buy people groceries, you know, I could do all kinds of things. And in the beginning, I was very tempted to do that, and did do sometimes. I mean, I would drive to Newport News to pick someone up, to bring her back to a meeting in Ghent, because she liked this meeting better. And I thought that if getting to a meeting was what was gonna get that person sober. And I was just like, you know, and I'm working full time and I'm trying to go to meetings and I'm driving, you know, and I thought, oh, you know, I need to go to any lengths. Am I willing to go to any lengths? Well, I found over time sponsoring people and just getting more and more frustrated with me sort of carrying the alcoholic and doing, giving, that they were relying upon my assistance rather than upon God, and really then relying upon themselves and other people and using the program. And, you know, and I was giving them maybe an opportunity to be dishonest, I guess, too. And so now I like where it says here, but when and how to give, because I still do those things. I think I still do all those things. But now I find myself kind of chomping at the bit, like wanting to say, well, I can help, I can do this, I can give that, I can help you. And I just wait. And for me, it's a real practice in patience. And for me, trusting God too, trusting that their God's going to take care of them. And that by them having whatever experience they need to have with whatever thing going on in their life, that that's what they need. And so not me trying to play God and fix them and step in for that role. And I think for me, the experience I've had is, it's been mostly with sponsees, that by stepping back and letting them handle it and seeing how serious they are and them doing the work and them relying on their God and their program and all that, then I can be helpful. And when I am helpful and I step in and I help or I do something, it's just kind of worked out a lot better than when I'm the first solution. I wait until maybe I'm the fourth solution or I'm a part of the fourth solution or something. I don't know if that makes sense at all, but... I love this line, the job or no job, wife or no wife. We simply do not stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. I share that. If for some reason, I don't have the big book memorized. I don't know what page every line is on and all that kind of stuff. But that is one that jumps out at me. Whenever somebody says, I can't stop drinking because of this, or I can't get to this meeting because of this, or I can't, you know, whatever. This always pops into my head, and I'm just, you know, when they talk about their living situation, their relationship, or whatever, that really comes to mind. And I think for me, personally, again, my success in AA, or and which I count as sobriety, really came from me hitting my bottom, me being sick and tired of being sick and tired, and yeah, sort of the whole proverbial falling on my knees and asking God for help, that it was true dependence upon God. And and that didn't happen day one in sobriety, or week one, or month one, or even year one. I mean, it was probably 3 years into sobriety where I was just so over myself and how I was living my life and what I was doing and just broken and miserable. And it's not that I don't want to be helpful to people, but I also don't want to deny them that gift of desperation. Like, I want them to be able to get to that point. And I sometimes feel like if I'm jumping in and helping too much, they're not going to get to that kind of jumping off point, or that, you know, sobbing on the floor of their bedroom, you know, just, oh, help me. You know, they need it. I needed to get there. And so I want to give somebody that opportunity to feel pain, you know, and that might sound, I don't know, mean or evil or something, but I think that pain and suffering is what motivates me. And I think that if things are sort of too easy for people, they're not going to be motivated to do what they need to do. That was my experience anyway, so.
My sponsor always tells me, if I'm trying to help people, if I'm trying to help you, you better run away. And I'm like, but we're supposed to help. We're supposed to help. And what I'm doing when I'm trying to help you is very different from what happens when God is showing me or directing me or guiding us to each other. It's very different. And this matter of giving, when and how, I always have to be careful of my ego that I don't recognize hardly ever. But when I'm trying to help someone and guide them and, you know, give to them, I have to be careful what's behind that. I'm the kind of person that wants to look good. Always. So I'm sitting up here tonight and I want to look good for you guys. I really want to look good and sound good, and I want to wow you. That's who I am, you know, and I really want that. And, you know, there's not too much I can do about that. It's part of my personality. But part of that is I'm aware of it today. And so I have to ask God to help me to set that aside. And he has to bring something else out of me. And I always ask him for that help when I'm trying to help a sponsee. When I go to my sponsor, I have to remember that she is, I made her my higher power for a good long time. And that's a really bad thing to do. She never failed to remind me she's just a human being, another drunk on the bus. That's all she is, and she's willing to give me everything, all her experience, strength, and hope. But she is not my God. And I have to remember that when I'm dealing with people who want to do that. I mean, it's natural for us to look up at somebody who seems to have something. She seemed to have something I did not have, and I wanted it really badly. And so I put her on a pedestal, and people have done that to me. And I kind of like it. And I have to be careful of that. There's a part of me, David Francis, I'm going to tell on him. He used to, wherever I went, he would come up to me, and I love David, and he would get down on one knee and kiss my hand. And I mean, I ate that up. Everywhere in public, people around, I loved it. And one day I was thinking, I'm going to the depot. Oh, I'll get to see David. And it struck me as what that was. And the next time I talked to him, I said, David, you got to stop. I like this too much. And he did, and I'm really grateful for that. But that's the kind of person I am. So my sponsees start idolizing me. I have to tell them, this isn't what it's about. I'm a drunk like you. We walk shoulder to shoulder. We're helping each other. And that stuff we say about the sponsee helping us more than we help them is true. And I have, I've had many sponsees, sometimes a lot at one time. And people would say, okay, how many sponsees do you have? And I'm like, 14, 15. And then one day I realized what I was doing. I was bragging about that. And so I stopped. And when people would ask me, I'd say, I don't know. And I quit counting. And when I quit counting, it really got to be a different relationship. So today, if someone asks me for help, I'm willing to help. Sometimes I can't. I don't have experience, so I am willing to, I know a lot of people. And maybe I know someone that can help them. And so I pass that information on. It used to be, if I didn't have an answer, I'd make something up. And I'm not proud of that, but it's the truth. I would give people advice. I never really gave them money because I never had any. But, I would, like Ashley, I would go to great lengths, go all over the place picking people up and, getting them to a meeting. Like, if I don't get them there, they're not going to get there. And I don't do that today so much. I like to think I have a little more balance about that and rely more on God. He's gonna use us the way we need to be used. And I like that wife or no wife, job or no job, but nobody believes that when you tell them. I certainly didn't. The first time my sponsor said, when I went to her with, relationship problems or I needed a house. It could have been anything, but I was desperate to have that, and clearly I was going to drink if I didn't. And she told me that, and I'm like, you're crazy. You don't understand. And she just smiled and repeated, you can stay sober regardless. And if you're a newcomer, that does not seem real. It did not seem real to me. It didn't make sense. There was so much I had to have, so much I really needed, and I had no idea of how to be sober without having everything I needed, because that's what alcohol did for me. It gave me everything I needed, or it made me forget what I needed and, not worry about it. But that thing about dependence upon other people is as true for me today as it was in the beginning, and I forget sometimes. I place a great deal of dependence on people, and I forget that is the wrong source for any solution to my problems. And I have to be reminded, and sometimes that's painful, and there are some very hard knocks associated with that. I'm really grateful today that I've had some experience with doing the action and practicing the principles without a surety that I was going to get what I thought I needed. And to have the experience of having what I needed come to me in a different kind of way. That's particularly present in my life with jobs. But I'll talk about that later. I'm not sure.
Continue on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put these principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on the man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
Mm-hmm. I love this section, and I have so much experience with family. And here's what my demonstration of spiritual principles looks like. And this happened 3 years ago. My brother drinks a lot, and he came to stay with me to help take care of our mother. And he was drinking like crazy, and I was trying to demonstrate spiritual principles. I was, again, trying to help him. So, you know, I suggested meetings. I took him with me to meetings. I told him how wonderful sobriety was. I told him how happy I was. So happy. And eventually, we ended up one Sunday at the library getting a book, and he's drunk. But not too drunk. He was pleasant. So we're in the shelves looking for books, and he starts talking about AA, and he says, "Y'all, you AAs, you just do interventions on people." And I flipped. I said, "We don't do FNM interventions. That's not what Alcoholics Anonymous is about." And my voice is getting louder and louder. "You don't have to." And my face is getting like that. And I'm yelling in the library at him. And my brother's real tall, and he's looking down at me all drunk and indignant. And he's saying, "You are out of control, girl." And I realized, yeah, I am. So that's how I demonstrate sobriety when I'm trying to do this stuff. I lived with my mom. My mom and I lived together for 10 years before she died. And for the first 5 years, I was a demonstration of indifference, neglect, arrogance, impatience. I don't hear any spiritual principles in there, but this is the way it was. This is how I acted. I spent all my time in the rooms of AA helping you guys. Mom's home alone. Thank God I did an inventory and got a sponsor that would help me with that. And at the end of her life, it was not like that. I stayed home more with her. I was more patient. I was more loving. And I am so grateful for that. It took a lot of inventory and a lot of prayer and a lot of help from various people. But today I'm really grateful that I was able to be brought to that place and have that memory of my mother. And, you know, for a while after she died, I sort of wanted to wallow a little bit in all the things I didn't do. And then I got to thinking, stop it. You were so lucky. You got to be with her. And you got to be a real daughter, good, bad, and indifferent. It's like the seventh step prayer. We got to give each other good and bad, all of us. I got all of that. And she got all of me. And today, I don't regret that. I am just grateful that it wasn't like that all the time. And that I was able to be different with her. There's a line right after what she read that said the guiding principle, talking about our family lives and everything, the guiding principle becomes more about giving than getting. And I did get to experience that with her. And my brother and I get along much better now. I had to kick him out because of his drinking. He went back home. He's better. And I didn't have anything to do with that.
I like the part in here about though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. And when I first got sober, I lived by myself. I didn't have a roommate. I didn't have a lot of domestic problems. And, you know, honestly, some of my family, because some of them are alcoholic or are recovering alcoholics, but at the time we're practicing, they didn't even think I was a real alcoholic. And, you know, because maybe I wasn't as bad as them. I don't know. You know, and I hid my drinking a lot, and I seemed like this on the outside. I looked like all good and shiny, and it was more inside that I was just broken and, you know, miserable and unhappy and all that stuff. But I think more so now, kind of like what Kay was talking about, I relate to this as is my life now. And even just in my current home life, whether it be my 6-month-old doesn't argue much yet, thankfully, but with my stepdaughter or my husband, especially with my husband, being able to go to him and, you know, and do amends and make an apology or make an amends and keep it all about me and never say, I did this because, or any, just anything about him, just to say this, to use that spiritual principle. And I can't always do it, honestly, but when I do it, it's amazing. And I don't always, you know, when it says, little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them, and not to badmouth them, but he typically doesn't do that. I'm sorry. Everything stays in this room. Don't tell him I said that. And don't direct him to this website. But he is not quick to apologize. He's not quick to see his own fault, and he might see it, but he doesn't verbalize that, because sometimes his actions, his behaviors change after we have a talk. After I admit my wrong and kind of humble myself and, you know, and really, but yeah, so sometimes it has an impact, but he doesn't verbalize it. But I think what I do is I walk away not feeling like a spiritual giant or anything like that, but just feeling like I did the right thing and feeling good that I'm living my life, that I'm trying to practice these principles regardless of the outcome, kind of like I talked about with sponsorship. I'm not wrapped up in what's going to happen to them. Are they getting sober or not? Are they going to have 10 sponsees? Are they going to start the best home group in Norfolk? That doesn't matter. What matters is sort of what am I doing right now in this moment? How am I handling the situation? I guess that's probably the main thing I have to share about that. And I guess I'll say one thing too, that I make mistakes, I freak out and scream and yell and act like a total crazy person. And what happens to me now, and sorry, I might get like crying when I say this, I feel like crap about myself. And I feel like that's not the person I want to be. And I know that's not who I am. And in the past, I would act that way and I felt like very justified in how I acted. And like, and in the moment, I might feel that way now, but it's 10 minutes later sometimes only where I walk out of somebody's office when I've been a total jerk or snapped at my stepdaughter or just acted not how I want to act, just kind of like, not trying to use bad language, but those are the only words that are coming to my head right now, so just acted very unprincipled. And so I can go back, like, I mean, I can still picture a time playing outside with my stepdaughter and just saying something. I think I might have said shit. And she had never heard me say that before. And she was so taken aback. And she said it to me later when I apologized. She said, I was just so surprised because I've never heard you talk like that before. And I just started crying because I thought, holy crap. This daughter has never heard me say a bad word. And that's the first bad word. Oh, my God. And I was so, like, humbled and, like, thanking God that he is helping me be this person Were she surprised to hear me say that word, and she surprised to see me react in a bad way and lose my temper and get frustrated? Because typically I can take a breath. I go to my room and I might storm out of the room. I shut the door, I don't slam it, and I pray. And my prayer is always, God, please help me to be kind, patient, tolerant, and loving. Help me to handle the situation as you would have me. And then I might go back and go, okay, what were we talking about just now? And that's not me. I mean, that is not what I do, and or how I used to be. And so, again, I'm not perfect. I'm probably more patient with my stepdaughter than I am with my husband, and I do better with her sometimes because she's a kid. I'm more forgiving, but yeah, this program has just taught me how to live, and it's helped me to be more of the person that I want to be and who I thought I was back then. But when I look at it, honestly, I definitely was not.
Okay, we've got a couple more paragraphs here. We're going to continue on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
I love that paragraph. It talks about persistence, and I believe, I could be wrong, that persistence is a spiritual principle. When I go to the gym, I don't like to sweat. The other day I went to the gym and sat in the parking lot, but I didn't feel like going, so I left. I don't finish things. I give up real easy. I think that's why I got sober, because I give up, you know. I don't have that drive some people have of persistence. And for a while, I was okay with that. I'm not so okay with it today, because persistence is a spiritual thing. And if I don't persist in this program, in trying to get a closer conscious contact with a power that can help me, then I'm going to get drunk again. Persistence is important. Thank God I only have to persist 24 hours at a time. That makes it a lot better. I like to, when people are having hard times, when I'm having a hard time, I like to be reminded that that there are remarkable things that are going to happen. In the beginning, I didn't have an experience of any remarkable things, and so it was really hard to believe when my sponsor would say, you know, just don't drink today. You're going to be so surprised that, you know, you're going to be a different person, you're going to... The promises, you know, that we all love so much about fear and being able to do things intuitively and all that stuff. But when you don't have experience of that, it's really hard to believe. I'm grateful today that I do have experience of, in persisting, in working the steps, however flawed. I told someone the other day, I used the tools very imperfectly, but I used them. You know, I sometimes hit myself in the head with the hammer, and sometimes I get way off the beam, but I do persist in trying to do these things. And thank God that's built into this program, that I don't have to do this perfectly. I just have to do it, and that's a good thing. And when I look back, I do realize that the things which came to me without my fingerprints all over them were so much better than the plans I had. When I came in here, my idea of sobriety was a job with insurance, a house, a relationship, and I got all that stuff and almost got drunk. And it all went away, and then I got something really strange, which was sober. And as a result of that, today, my life doesn't look anything like what I had planned. When I came in here, I didn't plan to be still hanging out here. I didn't plan, you know, to be still working at 66. I didn't plan a lot of things, but my life today is my inside life. The insides of me are so different than anything I ever thought would happen. The degree of comfortableness that I feel with you guys, I never thought I'd have that. I just never thought I'd be comfortable with other people. And today I've got that, to be useful. I am of use today. I'm at use at work. I'm at use with my family. I'm at use in AA. I am a useful person. I do useful things, and I'm really surprised at that. It wasn't anything I even wanted, and I certainly didn't think that that would ever come to me. I'm not always happy. I'm not that kind of person, but I am contented most of the time, and I am never alone up to this point. A lot of stuff has happened in the last year, and a lot of it has been scary, hard stuff, and I have been scared in it, believe me, but I have never felt alone, and I have never felt hopeless. In the midst of it, I felt such, I don't even know how to describe it, peace is pretty close to what I felt. And I never expected that, and I only got it because I persisted. Doing things right, doing things wrong, but trying always to take the suggestions that were given to me, to ask for help, to rely on something besides myself, not to pick up a drink. And as a result of that, I have been transformed, I owe it all to people like you who have walked this walk with me and have helped me all along the way and then allowed me to give it back. So thank you.
When I read this, that that first line, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. When I first came in, probably like 3 months, 6 months, 9 months in, I was always really scared to share because I felt like my share had to be sort of perfect, and I had to make it sound like I knew something, or I was imparting some like awesome information or something. And I think about now, I look back and I think the people who heard me share in the beginning were probably like, she's such an idiot, you know, just like she doesn't know anything, that kind of thing. And now I find when I share, and I don't know when it was, I think it was probably 3-4 years over when I was so miserable and unhappy, and I sort of at my desperation point where I was willing to do anything, I started going to a meeting where I just felt super comfortable, and I just shared from the heart. And I remember people's reactions, even just looking around the room when I'm sharing and sort of getting all teary and just completely being myself. I mean, I could have been talking to myself in the mirror. That's how openly I was sharing. And it made people attracted to me and what I had to say because they could relate to me because they saw the real me. And I wasn't trying to be phony or act like I really knew everything. And I wasn't prefacing it with, well, I wasn't really that bad or, you know, anything like that. I just was sharing about what an idiot I'd been, or that day, or back in the past, or whatever, and I would share about how much I hurt, or how scared I was, or whatever. And so, when I read this line about you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress, I still really try to do that now. I noticed how good I felt when I really let people know who I really was, and how good other people felt, and how much closer we got when I shared like that. And so I try to do that now, too, because I feel like my relationships with people I share with in the meeting or people that I sponsor are so much richer, and I feel unburdened, too, when I am true to myself and when I share that sort of true self with someone else. And then the line here about when we put ourselves in God's hands, or things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Like Kay, I had plans for myself, and if I had mapped out my life of what I thought I wanted it to be, and if I got what I wanted, I know now I would be absolutely miserable. Not even that my life would be so much better, not even that it's so much better now and that I have so much more and that it's so much more full and I'm so much more at peace, but I know I would be miserable. And I really think I probably would be drinking if I got what I wanted. And God kept me from bad things that I didn't need. And then also the good things that I have in my life now, whether it be sponsees, he kept them from me for a long time too, because I wasn't healthy enough to sponsor anybody. It was like 5 years, and I was saying to my sponsor, nobody's asking me to sponsor them. You know? Well, yeah, probably good for them. But when I was ready, I had sponsors. And when I was ready, I think the right person came in my life for a relationship. And when I was ready, I was able to get pregnant and have a child. And so, but like Kay was talking about, recently, I mean, I feel like I've gone a little bit of step back with all the changes in my life and trying to manage and control everything. And with work life and home life and all that, and it's kind of crazy. And I feel a little bit like it is a little look back into sort of how my insides were when I wasn't not in good spiritual touch. And so it's just recently it's kind of occurred to me, get back into the book, get back into calling your sponsor more, get back into inventory. Do I have the tools? I know what I need to do. And amidst all of this crazy stuff and busyness and anxiety and, you know, hustling, I have time for that, and I will make time for that to find that inner peace. And again, for the little bit that I feel that it's gone, I'm not nearly what I was in the beginning. I mean, it's amazing that, like I said, that my tolerance for feeling off kilter or feeling not serene or out of joint or whatever, it's much smaller now. Like I don't get off the beam. I mean, of course I get off the spiritual beam. Everybody does, I think, but I don't think I get 10 miles off the beam anymore. So, before I'm willing to do something to get back on track. So.
Okay. On page 100, assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show scenes of drinking. We must not go to bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we are to go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap, and even there in Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem.
When I first got sober, I tried to do like many people do, and I hung out with all the same friends, and I went to all the same bars, and did all the same stuff, and my alcohol addiction quickly turned to smoking, and I used to smoke when I drank, and so my new vice was smoking, and I would go to weddings, and I would have to buy a pack of cigarettes, because I would have to like have something to keep me calm, or meanwhile, I should have known that at that time I should have stayed away from these places. That if I was needing some sort of vice to get through some kind of situation or party or place where alcohol served, then I probably shouldn't have been there. Now I do feel like I can go anywhere and do anything. I find now that I just don't choose to do that. I still go to places where alcohol served and I go to parties and fundraisers and things like that, but from a practical standpoint, I find myself showing up right when it starts and probably leaving around 9:30 or 10 when everybody's on their third, fourth cocktail, when they start talking louder and telling you the same story and repeating themselves. I just don't find it that interesting anymore. And But for me, sometimes, I shouldn't say I have to be there, but sometimes I guess I choose to be there because it's in situations that, around family or things like that, that I want to be a part of my family. But especially in the beginning, and this might be Al-Anon speaking, but I always had sort of an escape route. I drove myself. I just made sure that I could leave. I had excuses lined up that I could say, you know, why I had to go someplace. But yeah, I think I used all those little probably living sober tricks and stuff like that, but now I don't have to do that. And I think what I find more now, like I said, showing up early, leaving early kind of thing, sometimes I think I used to have a lot of anxiety over what excuses I'm going to make and what I'm going to tell people and all that kind of stuff. Now I'm probably more likely to take care of myself and just do what I need to do to feel good. And I don't care if somebody says, oh, you're an old lady. I can't believe you're leaving at 9:30 or whatever. I just go, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, see ya. You know, and then I go home and I do what I want to do. But I don't know, just the whole thing about like having friends who drink and all that kind of stuff. I mean, some of this stuff seems a little antiquated, but I don't escape where alcohol is as long as I'm in a good spiritual condition. So,
the first part is vital, assuming we are spiritually fit. We can do all sorts of things. I love alcohol and alcoholics. But for a long time, I thought, oh, I can't be around them. It'll be too much temptation. And it was in the beginning. It was a big temptation. I couldn't be around my family because all of them drink. And I was just scared. I was scared of alcohol because I didn't have anything else. Today I do. I'm not scared of alcohol today. I have a roommate who whose second home is this bar, and she is the biggest bar person I have ever met, and she is also the nicest person I've ever met. But she loves the bar life. It's she's 70 years old and she's still going to the bar. And she is just so helpful to people, and she's fun, and she's a great person. And every now and then she'll say, let's go shoot pool, because I used to like to shoot pool. And this is a nasty, dirty bar. It's the kind I used to drink at. But now my sensibilities are a little more, but it is nasty. But I'll go in there and shoot pool and watch the people. It's just hilarious. And I worked in a little bar on First View called Rosie's. And it was a neighborhood bar, and they had sawdust on the floor, pool table. You know, kids came in and bought candy on one end, and their parents were drunk on the other. It was a great bar, and that's what this place is like. And I enjoy myself there for a little bit. And that's all I, you know, and then I leave. It's not because I have to leave or I'm afraid. I go. I'm done. Recently, a friend of mine who knows I'm an alcoholic, we've been friends for years, she is not an alcoholic, she said, let's go over to Newport News to Bar Louie. They're going to have a painting thing. I said, we're going to paint the bar? Yeah. And she said, no, you paint pictures in the bar. And I said, let's do it. And we had the best time, you know, and the food was good, and we got to paint a really cool picture. And I got to hang out in the bar, and it was fun. I get to have fun in bars. I didn't really have that much fun when I was drinking, but it's pretty fun now. And I can do that stuff. I can be around people who drink. I can do all kinds of things, and I'm grateful because there's a big world out there. I don't want to cut half of it out, although I was ready to do that in the beginning. My sister has an annual Christmas party every year, a drunk fest, and for years I wouldn't go. I went a couple of years ago and had a great time. And, you know, it was me, it wasn't them. It was me all along. So I'm able to do all of those things and have a good time doing it. Thank you.
Yeah.
just about out of time. I'll finish up on page 102, and then if somebody has a quick comment, they can share. Page 102, why sit with a long face in places where there's drinking? Sighing about the good old days. If it is a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go ahead and attend your business enthusiastically. If you are with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means go along. Let your friends know that you are not to change their habits. They are not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you are getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. Your job now is to be at the place where you can be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with those motives, and God will keep you unharmed. After all, our problems are of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to.
I guess Kay and I went a little long because that's a long paragraph to share on. But I love the line, keep on the firing line of life, and with those motives, God will keep you safe, I guess, to keep you out of harm's way, or keep you unharmed. Just sort of to go anywhere, do anything, be helpful to anyone. I wouldn't go alone, but to go pick up a newcomer at a sketchy place, or, you know, just things like that. I like that, and I just like that whole paragraph. It just a real spirit of service and helpfulness, and I think that's what our whole purpose on life is, not just in being an alcoholic, but I think most people that I'm friends with now and who I choose to spend a lot of time with are people who are trying to live lives of service, and that's really my goal. I feel like that's my purpose inside and outside of AA. So,
One quick thing, my roommate I was telling you about, Janie, she sends me referrals all the time. She tells everybody about her roommate who's in the AA, and she gives them my number. So you can't get more on the firing line of life, and that's pretty awesome.
Thank you. Okay, the seventh tradition, we're going to pass baskets here. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And at this time, we're going to do announcements. And next Monday, this group is going to have a separate speaker. We finished another round of the 12 steps. And so we'll celebrate next Monday night here in this room, starting at 6 o'clock. We'll have a potluck supper. Bring a dish if you wish. At 7 p.m., there'll be a speaker, Mike B., from Penrose, North Carolina.
Woohoo!
And we'll be right here in this room. And there were red flyers on your seats tonight, if you'll take those with you. And we have some up here on the table, too, if you've got any meetings that you're going to go to this week. And home group members as well, grab some of these and pass them out. We want to leave the table empty of red flyers tonight. They won't do us any good next Monday. Are there any other AA-related announcements?
My name's Dono, alcoholic.
Hey, Dono.
My old group, Freedom Big Book, is throwing a. They ordered the movie from. General Service Office in New York, the Bill Wilson story. It's Bill Wilson himself starring in the movie. And they're going to have it on November the 15th at 2 o'clock. They're going to have popcorn, coffee, and soft drinks. And It's in the social hall, and they moved to a new church about 6 months ago, the Third Presbyterian Church on Carlton Street, which is the street, if you're going towards Little Creek Amphibase on Little Creek, you make the left at the Bap Gion Auto Parts and Clancy's, between Bap Gion and Clancy's Go-Go Bar. Three blocks down on the left.
No, it's
there. They're having a social hall behind the church.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Thanks, Donna. Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. This meeting here is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, if you'll raise your hand. And newcomers. Is there anyone here that's in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce yourself so we can welcome you? Introduce yourself by your first name. Just raise your hand. Okay.
Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Ashley. Welcome.
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 My name is Damien.
Hey, Damien.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Anyone else? Yes.
Hi, Brian. Welcome.
Okay, we have a literature table up here. Pamphlets and flyers are free. Books have a small price. You can see me or a home group member after the meeting. And sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we have Evan and Judy. You'll raise your hands. They'll be up here at the table, right up here after the meeting. Come on up and feel free to talk to them about sponsorship. And we'd like to thank our panel, Ashley. Thanks so much. And thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. And please join us to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at IHOP on 21st Street. After the meeting, we'll be heading out there for those that would like to come up and join. And do I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Catherine? Hi, my name is Catherine, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Catherine.
And our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
May you help me place the Lord's Prayer.
But deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.